Improper payments from the federal government reached an all-time high last year. They totaled more than $124 billion. That's a $19 billion jump from the previous high, according to a new report from the Government Accountability Office. White House officials are examining this trend and looking for ways to head improper payments down again. For how they might do that, we turn to Danny Werfel, former controller of the Office of Management and Budget and now a director with the Boston Consulting Group. Danny, good morning. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Tom. It's good to be on the show.
All right. This has got to be disappointing to an OMB that has worked so hard for so many years to cut improper payments.
Yeah, absolutely. This has been a top priority on the management side of OMB for some time, and certainly progress has been made, and there are ups and downs in any management challenge, but obviously the numbers this year weren't good, and there needs to be a close examination of what can be done to deal with this issue.
Because it looks as almost as if they were pushing down on, you know, something that pops out of a one of those toys that pops up when you crank it, Jack in the Box, and almost like there's a spring on it. So how could it go down for so many years, and it was measurable, and then jump that much in one year?
That's the key question. And Tom, I've been involved in looking at this issue since the first legislation government wide was passed back in 2002. And I've learned a couple of different things I think are important. First of all, there's such a large footprint of improper payments error across government. You know, one of the things to think about over all this time, we still hover around north of $100 billion in error. And so there's just too much out there than the government has resources to attack. So what ends up happening is you prioritize different types of errors and try to drive them down. And over the past few years, as we've looked at different types of errors, we've been able to get a handle on them. But what can happen is that the rest of the pool of error that you're not prioritizing can start to shape differently and grow and emerge. And now you're playing catch up with the other types of errors that you weren't prioritizing. And the other thing is the errors that you are prioritizing, even those change. The threat, the different types of causes change. So your corrective actions have to keep pace. And I think what may be going on here is those two things are happening simultaneously, where the rest of the error pool is starting to grow and where it's been deprioritized, and the corrective actions that we put in place for where we've been prioritizing, those need to be updated because the world and the parameters are changing quickly.
Yeah, so in other words, as you cauterize one avenue for Medicare fraud, for example, then the fraudsters find a new way in. And so you can never really rest on your laurels if you've gotten Medicare fee for service improper payments down in a given year.
Yeah, what you try to do when you're attacking improper payments is often you sit there and you look at what are the most egregious types of errors, where are the types of errors within the portfolio that are going to cause the most problems when citizens look at it and say, you know, this is the type of error that I as a taxpayer want to make sure that we're preventing first. And then you go after those errors and you make progress. But let's say the progress is $100 million cut or $200 million cut, and that's great, especially if the investment in going after that type of error is, you know, let's say a couple of million dollars, and then the return is $100, $150, $200 million in reduced improper payments. But these programs are so large and massive, and there are other sources of error that you looked at and you said, well, for this year, I'm going to target the more egregious error, one maybe that's subject to fraud or, you know, where there was intent to defraud the government, and I'm gonna have to celebrate the fact that I was able to attack $100 million, $150 million and get rid of them. But in other areas, maybe it was less fraud ridden, but still error ridden. You could see growth of $500, $600, $700 million. So it's a tough battle, and you have to make tough trade offs along the way.
Now this year, I guess 2014 is the year that the GAO is talking about. The earned income tax credit jumped to an error rate of 27%, and that accounted for the second biggest lump of improper payments, or $17 billion. Now, having been at the IRS, do you think it's because of budget cuts and the inability to do enough auditing that might have caused this to happen?
A combination of things. I mean, a couple of things that are important about the earned income tax credit. First of all, it's a really complicated set of eligibility criteria. It's like hitting a tight bullseye to make sure that you're correct, that this person is truly eligible for this amount of an earned income tax credit. Things, for example, like did this individual taxpayer live with their dependent child for more than 6 months out of the year? And, you know, that's the type of stuff that's really difficult to validate short of doing an in-depth audit. And for a while, several years ago, the IRS was doing audits in order to drive down EITC error and having some success. But then, you know, there were concerns on the other side of the equation, which were auditing a lot of poor people, a lot of people that are eligible for earned income tax credit. That's kind of at the poor end of the spectrum of the U.S. population. And we were taking audit resources away from auditing, you know, wealthier individuals or auditing corporations. And so the IRS, before I got there, made a determination to kind of even out some of the audits. And what they did instead was they did what I was talking about earlier, which is where are the big problems with the EITC that are most egregious? So, for example, what am I going to worry about more? Am I going to worry about the fact that someone who lived with their dependent child for 4 months out of the year rather than 6 months, but was otherwise eligible and otherwise indigent, got an EITC credit? Or am I going to worry about the situation where we have identity theft or an unscrupulous tax preparer who's kind of bilking money from innocent people, and that's going into the improper payments category? And what the IRS did was they shifted their focus to the more egregious version of the error. But that ends up being, overall, while it's egregious and you certainly want them to root it out, it's a smaller portion of the overall error. And so as they shift into that area and do the things you want them to do as a taxpayer, again, they're deprioritizing the bigger source of error, where you might look at it and say, it's an improper payment, I want them to fix it, but they should fix the bigger problem first.
We're speaking with Danny Werfel. He's former controller at the Office of Management and Budget, now a director with the Boston Consulting Group. And if there's any theme into the top improper payment issues, Medicare fee for service, earned income tax credit, Medicaid, Medicare Advantage, unemployment insurance, and supplemental security income, they seem to be characterized by two main facets. One is they are complicated rules that apply to them, and two, it applies to large numbers of cases. It's not a single thing like buying a battleship that sinks, but it's millions of individual cases. And so it seems like the government, it's almost inherently a problem that can never really be eliminated.
Well, you know, I'm an optimist, so I never want to say never. But here's a couple of thoughts I have for how to think about this problem going forward and some of the things that federal agencies can be doing. And as we've been talking about, this is it's a huge amount of transactions to monitor. It's not just going out and monitoring the transactions. It's also understanding the error, the sources of error, what are the root causes, and that's an investment. You have to go in and you have to study. You have to pull samples of payments and understand exactly what's going on and track the payment to really see what's going wrong so you can build the model of what some of the systemic issues are that we need to go after. And I really think that over time, and these things, as I said, they change quickly. Time moves, the information age, fraud schemes, they're changing constantly. So what I really think needs to happen is agencies have to better understand where the highest return on investment is for their dollars that they're investing in rooting out improper payments. And they really have to get aggressive on data analytics, aggressive around innovation. And this involves, you know, making sure that we're getting the right talent, getting the right training for people, investing in the right solutions. And again, in an era where there's a lot of budget cuts, you know, we've pulled back on our training dollars. These are tough decisions that agencies have to make in terms of where they want to put their resources. But you know, my sense is that if they invest appropriately and really put, you know, there's someone sitting at the table saying, we have to do more on improper payments. We have to innovate more. We have to understand our root causes more. We have to establish targeted efforts around these pockets of egregious error, I think they can start to move that number back down again.
And it's probably fair to say they need to get into a prevention mode as opposed to a recovery mode. There's a story in the Wall Street Journal this morning that says HHS will report today that they recovered $3.3 billion in healthcare fraud. But when you balance that against the, let's see, 40, 50, 62, almost $63 billion that went out, you really got to prevent rather than try to recover.
Yeah, I mean, it's the constant thing. It's the theme we've been talking about today, which is the problem is so large, you have to pick and choose where you do battle, right? And certainly, as a taxpayer, I want HHS focusing on areas of fraud and intent. But in a limited resource environment, that may mean that they're doing less around some of the systemic error that's driving big numbers that might be more administrative in nature, might be something that's going on in the coding of Medicare claims that's not necessarily fraud or intent, but is driving big improper payment dollar amounts. And so, you know, so two things. One, I would not advise, you know, HHS to take their foot off the pedal of all the great work they're doing on fraud enforcement and bringing those folks to justice and getting those dollars back. But I would also suggest that because the problem is growing, that everyone has to raise their game on all the other sources of error, and we have data analytics and new technologies and ways of innovating that we can get a handle on this, and we have to start looking at cost-effective ways of going after a larger pool of the error.
Danny Werfel is a director of the Boston Consulting Group and former comptroller in the Office of Management and Budget. Danny, as always, great to have you on.
My pleasure.